Have you ever had questions that you wish you had your very own on-call pediatrician? Well, guess what? We are going to have a real pediatrician as a regular guest on the Dad Podcast. So if you have a question you have always wanted cleared up, please send it to questions@thedadpodcast.com. Because Dr. J wants you to stop Googling that shit and find out the real deal Homiefield answers from a real deal Homiefield pediatrician. So ask us at questions@thedadpodcast.com. I'm here to tell you about Naptime Radio. It's a show for moms and dads, and these chicks are super cool.
Mac Daddy and Damia.
And they want you to listen.
Yes, we want it. We want it so bad.
I know you do. Heather and Kate offer helpful info for parents with their power naps. Oh, and did I mention? These chicks are sexy as hell, y'all.
Let's ride that train.
All I need is a ticket.
Let's eliminate one article of clothing for one meal. How about that?
Oh, now it's a party. So go to naptimeradio.com or click on the logo available on our site.
Nailed it!
Chase the sun and get crazy, have some fun. And if you're on the run, we're chasing the sun.
Hello and welcome to the Dad Podcast. This is episode 32. As you saw in the description, I am via Skype with Robin Guyver, who is our first transatlantic guest. You are coming to us from the UK, right, Robin?
That's right, yeah.
And am I right? Correct me if I'm wrong, and I think I already know the answer, but it would be really funny if I just went with it, and then you're like, no, not at all. But you're a listener to the show.
Oh, yes, well. Yeah, I definitely am, yeah. Pretty much since Rufus was born.
So. Oh, right on. And so you have a son, Rufus, who is 18 months old.
That's right.
I want to know, there's so many things, because even though people are hearing this in January, it's technically before Christmas that we're recording this. I'm still on the road. Mm-hmm. I was hoping to get some insight from you as to what is it like to raise kids in UK versus, say, America. Are there any differences? Because I know your wife is from America.
That's right, yeah. Well, Jen's from Dallas, and so we get over there, and her sisters have kids over there, and I've got an understanding of what life is like in the States as well. But I mean, for me, the biggest difference I find is we use our stroller a whole lot more here.
This is already awesome out of the box. Okay. That was not what I was expecting to hear at all. And I can't wait to hear more about that.
So I don't drive. I've never driven. My parents don't drive. I grew up in London. And we buses and underground trains is just it's our way of life.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I can drive a car, but I don't have a license just because I don't need one. And so we spend a lot of time walking places and taking the bus. And whenever we're in Dallas, that's just not an option. People think we're crazy if we're walking around.
And how did you meet your wife from the States?
She came over here to study. She studied at an acting school here, and that's how we know each other.
So you're both actors.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Can you speak for her a little bit and tell me, here's the thing that I think is interesting. I don't think it's that different in my personal opinion. I'm sure that there are subtle differences within the culture and all that stuff, but I just think it's really entertaining that I know that I have American listeners that are probably wondering, like, I wonder what it's like over there. like you live on a distant planet of some kind. You know, do you get that? Is that an American thing, or do you think that British people feel the same way about Americans?
Probably. I think the British view of America is probably equally skewed, definitely. I mean, I know a lot of friends who think that every American kind of has a gun in their backyard or something. And, like, that's just the kind of the cowboy.
Yeah, we're all cowboys. That's awesome. Yeah. I love it. So let's see. I have so many questions running through my brain, and I'm trying to just put them in an order. I think I already asked another one, and I skipped over it, about the idea of, like, the difference, like, culturally Is it hard for your wife? Is there any kind of weirdness for your wife being an American living there? Did she ever have any kind of issue, or did she just kind of come in and it's like, oh, it's fine?
I mean, a huge, huge thing for us is one of the things she talks about a lot is, I guess, we don't have to pay to have a baby. So
yeah,
that's, I mean, the free healthcare here it's not why we chose to be here. It just happens to be that we're here and it's like that. But for her, that was a big thing. And her sisters had a very different situation and a different experience of that. So I know for her, she was been really, really impressed with that and happy with that. And it's not to say that the situation is better over here at all, but it's just for her, that's something that keeps coming up again and again that made a big difference.
That is a hot topic issue, I think, now. And because you guys pay for, it's part of your taxes. Like when you pay taxes, yeah, your health care is covered in that. I'm sorry?
We pay a lot of taxes.
Yes, you pay a lot more. Yeah, and which makes, see, that's the part that I think there are non-cowboy Americans that are over here that they walk around in Birkenstocks and they more try to live. They're more like Indians, is what I would say.
So, one of those guys.
Yeah, and so they're the opposite of cowboys, and they think that, well, you know, Canada and England, it's like, oh, it's perfect. They just have free healthcare. It doesn't cost them a dime. Mm-hmm. And so then there are people who are cowboys over here who say, yeah, it does. They pay a lot in taxes for that. And I'm just curious, like, do people in England look at the American healthcare system and think that it's insanely dumb and that it doesn't make sense to them?
I think the general impression is we're very grateful to have what we've got here, the National Health Service. I mean, there's a lot of critique of it as well. I mean, obviously it's not perfect by a long way. Yeah, I think in general, in my circle of friends and family, we're very grateful to have it here, definitely.
And is it whatever, because the cowboys over here also like to say that...
I like that we were breaking this up. This is cool.
Isn't this fun? We'll get into parenting first, and I apologize for my ADD, but I'm just incredibly interested in this. The cowboys over here also think that you deal with, like, DMV. I don't even know. Are you familiar with the DMV long lines that we have here?
What's the DMV?
The DMV is the Department of Motor Vehicles. So when you go to get your driver's license and stuff like that, like, you would wait in line for 8 hours just to fill out a piece of paperwork, and then you have to come back. And so that's what the cowboys on this side of the pond, as you say, that they say that if we had a government-oriented healthcare system and that it was covered in our taxes, that the system would be completely flooded and that everybody would just be dying in the waiting rooms. How say you on that, having been a part of it?
There's definitely a well-known urban myth. It's not a myth. It's quite true that if you go to the emergency room, if it's not a big emergency, you'll be waiting for 8 hours.
Yeah. Which is the same here, even with our privatized healthcare system. Yeah. So I guess it's what we've decided here on this Insignificant Dad podcast is that government-funded healthcare or privatized healthcare, it's 6-1, half a dozen the other. So.
Pretty much. I reckon you can probably sit down and work out. We may well pay the same.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So now let's get down to brass tacks and parenting. How is your first 18 months into the soiree of parenting been for you?
It's got me thinking. Now, we did just have our first trip to the emergency room pretty recently.
Oh, really? With your little guy?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, no.
We just moved into a new house, and he's been running around having a great time. We kind of covered up all the sockets, and we thought, great, this is great. He's safe, totally safe here. It's brilliant. After staying with family for a long time.
Yeah.
Waiting for the house to come through. And still he manages to find the one sharp edge on a door frame to catapult head first and smash into it. And it was just that situation where we looked down and within half a second it had swelled up like half an egg and he was screaming and there was a little bit of baby blood and we just kind of freaked out and found that mapped to the hospital and headed straight over.
And what did the hospital tell you? They said, oh, he just bumped his head. He'll be fine. Give him some Tylenol?
Yeah, I mean, they said we did the right thing to bring him in, but I mean, he was okay. And just as long as he doesn't throw up and things like that, then just not to worry too much.
That's always an interesting thing, I think, that you don't want to be the person who's overly concerned because I grew up, both of my parents were in the medical field. Now, they're not doctors. My mother is a respiratory therapist, and my dad repairs anesthesia equipment and now repairs all the monitoring equipment, stuff like that, at a hospital. So their approach to healthcare and the system is very, jaded or cynical, if you would. So they look at it as like, hey, he's fine. It's like, you know, like, like, if you're not dying, you don't need to go there. And like they would say, a bump on the head is there. But then at the same time, a bump on the head could also be a concussion. And you know what I mean? Which could be something that you want to have looked at and taken care of. Do you feel that you fight that stuff in your head the same way? Like, is it really worth it? Or are we being overly precautious? Or
I mean, my wife did turn to me afterwards and go, you know, if I hadn't been around, would you have taken him? And I thought, and I think I probably wouldn't have done.
Yeah, you're a dad. That's.
Yeah, I think I would have gone, you know, it's probably going to be okay.
But, yeah.
But I think if I told her that, that wouldn't be good either. So.
See, again, it proves my theory that dads, no matter where they live in the world, they're pretty much dads. That's how that's how it all boils down. We're like, yeah, so he's got a goose egg. Yeah, that's what happens when you bump your head on a solid piece of wood. That's how it works. Now, 3 days later, he was still like crying and whining about it. Then you're like, all right, maybe we'll go do something about it. But
okay, honey. Yeah. Well, actually, he did have a little bump. So listen, yeah.
Like, all right. Okay. All right. That's great. I love it. Now, you said you listened to the show, and this is another curiosity that I have, too, because I have a lot of people in my act that I talk about the struggle in my stand-up act of jumping from one child to two. Now, in listening to the show and hearing my struggles from one to two, people have come up to me after the show and said, honestly said, they're like, you know what, we're not going to have a second kid. And some of them are joking. Some of them have a glint of sincerity in their eyes. And like, I've genuinely frightened them away from having multiple children. How say you on this, Robin?
I mean, we have just today got the pregnancy test back, and it's a no, we're safe, we're clear for now. Right? But we literally had that one line today and went, whew.
Oh, woo, that bullet dodged? So is it a thing where you want one, but maybe not immediately, not right now, not so back-to-back?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, there's part of me that just kind of relishes the idea of the challenge.
Yeah. I think it has to be something biological. You know what I mean? That biologically, whether you believe in it's God destined, where he's like, you know, be fruitful and multiply, or it's just pure evolutionary science of like, we must continue the species and the family line, you know, all that stuff. You are biologically engineered to be stupid about having as many children as you can. And it takes you having some horrible, I very rarely hear people say, you know what, I want to have just one child. I just want to have one child just that I can dump my energy into that one child. Most often, if you, especially young mothers, like people who get married young, you know, in their early 20s or something, like, I just want five children. I just can't wait to have so many. And then they have one child, they go, we're going to go for two. Or sometimes they'll say, we're going to go for three. And then they have that second child, usually the demon child. So good luck with that, Robin. And then they go, two's enough. That's it. It's always some kind of tap it. That's it. Three is fine. We tried for a girl. Screw it.
Oh, and that's it, man. I would love to have a little girl as well, I think. And that's another thing of just like, I mean, I love Rufus to bits and he's great, but it'd be so cool to have a little girl as well.
Yeah, you like the idea of having, I think, and that's the other thing about it is that beforehand, and there will be, and that's, it's interesting, because I do a lot of railing almost to where I make parenting sound like it's this horrible thing. And I think that the parents that listen to the show understand what I'm really trying to say is that obviously it's not fun. And I just don't like pretending that it's something that it's not. I think that if everybody knew, had some semblance of an understanding that it sucks, that when you go in to it, you're like, well, this is what I was prepared for. This is exactly what I was expecting. But I think more often we go into it going, no, where's my blessing? I was expecting.
The puppies and the rainbows.
Yeah, exactly. Why am I just getting shit and vomited all over and pissed on? This isn't a blessing. And so I obviously everybody goes into it, you know, and they say, oh, I would like to have I just want him to have a brother, or I just want to have a girl. But I think you should be prepared. I don't know, because I don't have girls, but I have heard other people speak that you should be prepared. It's the same old thing. Be careful what you wish for, because you may get it. And then you have the girl and then you're like, oh, this was not. Oh, boy. Is there the same stigmatism in Britain about like if a girl grows up and she's dating, like do you have the same protective father issue or is it?
I think so. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I none of my friends have girls yet. I mean, not a lot of my friends have kids yet. I've been one of the first ones in our group. But yeah, I mean, I think definitely out of people's sisters I've grown up with and friends, there's a real kind of, you've got to look after the ladies. So.
Can I ask you how your life has changed in a way that you did not expect? Is that something that you maybe have on the tip of your tongue?
I mean, my social life is a very different thing to what it used to be. And even though I work a lot of evenings and nights doing shows and things like that, but probably on a similar schedule to you, but is but still, yeah, I'm not hitting the bar afterwards at all.
Yeah, everybody, all the younger people in the production are going out and like, let's go, let's have a good time. You're like, yep, I got to turn in because I'm only going to be asleep for 2 hours and then probably up again.
Sleep like 2 or 3 in the afternoon, and I'm like, oh, I hate you. Yeah.
I find now, and I don't know if it's because I feel like, how can I ask how old you are? I'm 33. Are we similar?
I turned 30 a month ago.
So we're close to the same age. I find that I kind of like the idea of being the old guy. Like, mm-hmm. I like having kids, and I like, you kids, you go out and you have your good time and you drink your beers and you puke in a planter. That's what's fun for you. Me, I'm going to go turn in, maybe have a bowl of ice cream. You don't know what I'm going to do. Might watch some late night television if I feel risky.
Box set, you know.
Maybe roll over and whisper in my wife's ear, like, you in the mood? that's what I'm going to do.
try again the next night.
Yeah, exactly. It's just you go through a swing and a miss.
Yeah.
What's it like traveling? Or have you done it yet? Is this going to be your first soiree across doing a transatlantic flight for the holidays?
We took him last Christmas when he was 3 months, maybe.
Oh, boy. How did that go?
Maybe 6 months. And yeah, and that was okay. We had a kind of a bassinet thing that he was in, and he was nice and quiet, and he just kind of slept on us. Mm-hmm. I think next time we do it, it's going to be in March, and he's going to be a lot more mobile and a lot more opinionated. I'm not looking forward to it at all.
Yeah.
That's going to be 10 hours, I think, to Dallas. And yeah, that's going to be.
Why would, and I guess it's because there's just so many of them, but I just feel like, why wouldn't, you know, at least grandparents, like, why don't they just make a trip to see you?
Yeah, my wife's parents don't have passports, and the idea of flying is just not on their agenda.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's, which is cool. I mean, that's, they have their lives and they're very happy.
Of course.
With them. Yeah, but they kind of struggle to understand why she needed to leave home and leave Dallas.
So you have to, is that rough? Because now she has a, like, it's one thing when you're like, oh, okay, I got a boyfriend over here while I'm studying acting in the UK. And then all of a sudden boyfriend turns into husband. You're like,
yeah, and she's not coming back quite so often. And yeah.
And then now you have a kid where it's really hard. Because I used to go back and see my parents once a month when we just had my older son Jacob, but since the second one it goes like 3-4 months and I don't get to see them, and so now that he's not needing to breastfeed and my schedule might be slowing down, I'm going to try, if I'm not working the road a lot, then I'm going to go like one weekend home and be able to at least visit my family and try to do that. But that's a 5-6 hour drive for me. For you, it's a budget item.
Oh yeah, man, it's like, yeah, it's we're planning it a year ahead.
Yeah you have to. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, I don't know, but I would imagine that an actor's salary in the UK is pretty proportionate to an actor's salary here in the United States.
Pretty much, and, yeah.
Not everybody's pulling in Tom Cruise money out there, listeners. Some of us are, you know, we're making a good living, and it's not like it's, but it's not like it's comfortable. You know?
You pay kind of $1,500 on a plane ticket, I guess. Maybe, I don't know, I'm guesstimating the exchange rate, but it's going to be something like that.
Yeah, to go transatlantic. Oh my gosh, yeah, that's why we were kicking around the idea early on that we were going to go to Chicago and live there, and then I was, and my wife brought up a good point. She goes, if we move to LA, then it's just a drive. If we move to Chicago, like I said, it's a budget item that in order for us to go home and visit for the holidays and stuff like that. So, well, I'm going to give you a little bit of insight into what is your near future. Do they do the preschool thing? Hold on. Let me first say this. Uh-huh. Is it bothering you that I keep asking you questions about the British culture and how it compares to ours?
No, it's great. It's
okay, cool. Good. Because I have more. Because here's what I'm dealing with, and I brought it up earlier, and it's still a sore button issue for me. Is this idea of my kid, I pay a lot of money. We pay $725 a month for my son to go to a preschool. And then he goes, and I love the teachers. I love the school. I love them to death. And it's part of my job is I look for things to complain about. So that's the reality of who I am and what I do. But he comes home with these art projects, right? And then I'm supposed to look at these art projects like they're the most amazing things I've ever seen in my entire life. Now, I love my son. Do I think he's the next Picasso? Hell no. No way. It's just usually there's lots of paint smeared everywhere. But because I love him and I tell him, oh, this is great, you know, good job and all that stuff. But how do I get rid of it? Like, how do I create like some kind of crop rotation? What survives, what makes the cut and all of that stuff? Like, how do I go through that? That's what I'm wrestling with right now.
We have boxes of Christmas cards from years and years ago that my other half just will not let me destroy. I've been battling to get rid of them for a long, long time. But yeah, for her, they're vitally important. So.
Am I wrong? Is that I feel like that's a very American thing, too, because I know people that have gone from here to there, and that because there is less geographic space, mm-hmm. that the idea of trash is something that is very thought out. And so it's like things are very small. Packaging is minimized. Am I wrong?
Absolutely. I mean, an American refrigerator is easily twice the size of one we have here.
Right. And so is our trash cans as well.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, and just everyone, apartment complexes, flats are just standard, certainly living in the city.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, to get a large house here is, you're talking in the millions easily.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
You're in London, am I right?
That's right, yeah. So the standard of living that my wife's family have in kind of suburban Dallas on kind of a pretty low income is incredibly high, I think, compared to what we're used to here in terms of the space that people have. It's just, you guys are so lucky. It's amazing.
Yeah, well, and it's funny, though, that luckiness creates a lack of perspective in that, you know, we just throw things away. Like, we just, all right, we'll get rid of this. And just imagine it goes to some distant place that we don't ever see. But if somebody told us it was getting dumped in the ocean, well, then there would be picketing and rioting.
Yeah.
You know, which I always think is funny when people picket and riot about, you know, where waste is going. It's like, well, what do you think is going to go to your signs? What do you think is going to happen with all these signs that you've made and sandwich boards? You think that's going to be lasted forever? But do you guys do the same? Is it like preschool and then you go into kindergarten and all that stuff?
We call it nursery, but yeah, it's pretty much the same. Is that you can send the kids along there. We haven't done it yet. I think as and when there's two of them, that'll be a lot more important, because both of us end up working from home on different projects now and again. So just having that time to get things done is going to be so vital.
Are your parents nearby?
They are. I'm very lucky with my in-laws. They help us out a lot. Yeah, they really, really. With my in-laws and my parents, my wife's in-laws, they really help us out a lot.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're going to be staying with us over Christmas time, but that kind of means actually we can go and do stuff as well, which is great.
Yeah, because I was going to say, do you guys have to do a thing where only one of you can be in a project at the same time so that...
Exactly, yeah. There's a lot of that kind of stuff and juggling, or one of us working in the evenings after he's gone to bed while the other one's doing other bits and pieces. So.
Yeah.
We lose, as you do, we lose a lot of time with each other, which is always a pain.
Oh, yeah. But. Isn't that the worst? That's me, which I think is good, because I think it's a good sign of a nice, solid marriage. Because the thing that I miss the most of pre-children is the time that I have with my wife. It's like even now, I miss my kids like crazy. Mm-hmm. And I've been on the road since December 5th. I'm not going home until Christmas Eve. Mm-hmm. And I've talked to them, and I tried to do FaceTime. But FaceTime just turns into my kids looking at their noses in the in their own little preview.
Sister's son, and he just kind of pops up little action figures in front of the camera and makes them run around, which is great.
But. And he does, it's adorable. But then when my wife and I try to talk, they of course get bored and they just start making noise and going blah blah blah, and we can't really hear each other. So the other night, I finally had my first conversation in 2.5 weeks, probably even longer if you really think about it, of just her and I talking about what's going on in our lives and like, what are we on the same page and all that stuff, which I think adults need to have. Surprisingly enough.
Yeah. And she's doing okay? She's surviving?
Yeah. You know, I think so. She goes through peaks and valleys. Thanks for asking, Robin. That's very kind of you. That she started off where she's like, okay, I'm ready. I'm ready for you to come home now. And then she just, you know, she settles into a groove and just kind of lowers her head and says, it is what it is. She's a great chick. I'm very lucky. Yeah. And she just figures it out. I would love, like I said, that the listeners have already heard. I don't know if the episode has been released yet. I don't know. It hasn't. There's an episode that you haven't heard, Robin, that the listeners heard last week. My wife took my son to the emergency room. So I would like for there just be one trip where I go out on the road where one of my children doesn't go to the hospital. That's my new I've lowered the bar significantly. Yeah. I would like for them just to be quasi-happy and not throwing fits all the time. But my wife has decided that that is far too difficult a task and needs the bar lowered to just surviving. Just being able to live, maintaining breath and heart rates is very important to her because I don't know why that I, as I've said, I can go months with this kid, Robin, not going to the emergency room. I leave for 5 days. He's in the emergency room, has 104 fever. I don't know what she does. I don't know what she feeds him. I don't know how it's different when I'm there, but it happens. And nothing I can do from across the country. Nothing I can do, sir. So is there a big, with the nursery school, is there a big thing where you have to go to the nice, there's a documentary that I've seen here where especially in New York City, that if you don't get into the best nursery school, that dictates what school your kid gets into on the next level and the next level. Is that same kind of idea happening in Britain?
There's a lot of competition for schools, definitely. I mean, already we're having to think about where Rufus might be going, and it's I don't even know where to start. It's like, do I Google it? Do I ask other people? Do I go to the schools and ask them? That's kind of one of the things that's on my mind at the moment, is beginning to work that out already. And he won't be going there, I mean, if we don't do nursery for another kind of 2.5 years.
Yeah, so. But you have to start thinking now.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Which because is of wait lists and all that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, awesome. There's no pamphlets for that anywhere. There's no kind of like, you know, this is what you do. So we're working that one out as we go, I guess. But
as with anything, it's so interesting to me that the lack of information that is offered in a world that seems flooded at the same time with information, but yet we all go through it going, I don't know. I just need cliff notes. If I could just get some cliff notes, because I don't have time to read your 300-page book. I don't know if you know this, but I'm exhausted. Yeah. And I've got no sleep. And so I just need somebody to look at me and go, hey, here's what you need to do next. Uh-huh. Which is what sucks when you all these people that wait. They, you know, that's who I hate. I hate the person in your circle of friends that has the kids last because they get to go. They get all the shortcuts. Like it's no problem. And so then you get to sit there and look at them and watch them complain and go, I gave you a high chair. What are you bitching about? There's nothing to complain about from you. I helped you.
We met up with some of our neighbors the other day, and they're pregnant, and we kind of got them all around, and because it's a new building, there's a lot of new families in the area. Mm-hmm. There's this one guy called Joe, and his wife is expecting twins right now, and this poor guy looks so tired. I'm just kind of, and he's kind of got the benefit of a lot of families in the area, but at the same time, you can just see that he kind of knows what's coming and is terrified.
He's scared. And you, of course, look at him not with, hey, buddy, let me help you out, but you're like, yeah. You kind of wallow in it.
Yeah, like, man, yeah, it's going to be good.
Just buckle up. Sure. Just buckle up, because I'm going to thoroughly enjoy every ounce of what you're going to go through. Oh, that tickles me. That tickles me, Robin. That tickles me. I'm still curious about more of the differences between but because here's what I love is that I think it's from my stupid American standpoint is that I think that there are differences, but all I'm finding is that there are a ton of similarities in there. Like, is there a big push for organic foods over there? Is that a big thing to give babies?
They're telling us that's what we got to feed the kids. I mean, they're telling us that's what we feed ourselves as well, but definitely more and more we're hearing that kids need to get organic eggs or organic vegetables or, really? Or organic whatever it might be. Yeah.
And where do you stand on this?
I mean, I don't know. We get the organic eggs. We get the organic milk for Rufus, definitely, just because I think it's not worth my argument on it, I think, to stand up to that. But I think for me, I end up just getting the normal fruit and swashing it and hoping, I guess.
Yeah. Well, that's what I think. Here's what's interesting to me about that whole argument, and you could call me ignorant. That's fine. Not you, but the list. You could call me ignorant as well, Robin. But
it's okay.
This idea that it's been this way, and then all of a sudden there's this new way, and that's instantly better. And what you're it's the way that things peg. That it's like, I feel like the way it's marketed isn't like, hey, this could probably be a little bit better for you. It's that it's either this or you could risk dying if you ate those old apples. Mm-hmm. Like if you don't scrub them really good, like if you don't soak your apples in bleach, something's going to go wrong with you. Like,
smoking a few years ago, man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Is there a big push for breastfeeding over there too?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that was something that we saw. All of the maternity wards we went to, but breastfeeding was everywhere. And it seems to be well supported here. I know Jen's sister had a baby in Dallas, and she really struggled with getting support for breastfeeding. I don't know if that's the case across American health.
What do you mean by support? Like as far as like people saying, hey, this is how you do it, and this is what
encouragement and help when she wasn't quite sure what she was doing.
Yeah. In California, I know, or at least Southern California, you are bombarded with lactation specialists. All you have to do is say the words, I plan to breastfeed my baby, and they have a nurse, they have a lactation specialist that comes in, and like literally it's quite interesting. It's the closest thing I think you'll get to live-action porn with your wife, where you have another woman grabbing your wife's breast and shoving it into a baby's mouth and manipulating it, and you're just kind of, and it's interesting that you see this happening, and you have an inkling of, ugh, that's kind of uncomfortable that she's just touching my wife's boob, and I don't know if it's your animal monkey brain that's like, yeah, slower, or and that kind of weird social weirdness of it, but then there's also a clinical aspect of it where even you are like, okay, so this is how you do it. I found myself as a father looking at it like I was going to be tested on this later, and so I need to be prepared. I need to understand, so I make a sandwich and I shove it into his mouth is what I do. Okay. All right. I know how to do that.
Yeah.
And I'm also, what were you saying? I'm sorry.
Oh, just, one of the weirdest kind of, I guess, most intimate and possibly least intimate experiences between my wife and I was kind of helping her express breast milk by hand myself when her hands were just too aching and we were too tired to do anything else. One of the least sexy and yet most intimate and bonding moments we've had was doing that.
I know exactly what you're saying because it was so like in the moment there wasn't really passion there.
Yeah.
But if you throw up a webcam, all of a sudden you guys don't have to worry about money ever again.
Like, next kid around, I'm going to think about that.
Yeah, I would seriously. Trust me, both my wife and I, for a lot, like we spent a lot of time where. I don't know if you guys went through the same thing, but especially with the first kid, it's such uncharted territory in your brain. And like you said, there are no pamphlets really. You can read books, but I don't know what it is about your brain. Like I've had friends and even my parents tell me things that you feel like it hits you, but you still go through that with this like confused haze. Mm-hmm. So there was talk at one point I was kicking around a theory of trying to grow marijuana to sell illegally to be able to feed my kid. And then the next phase was that we could do like some kind of a webcam. Now, here's the thing. In all seriousness, Robin, were we kidding? Yes. But in all seriousness as well, if it really got down to it, we could go, well, remember that joke we were doing last week? I mean, we could do that. And both of us would be like, okay, yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. When things got really bad financially, I spent some time Googling just to figure out what the risk was if I tried to grow marijuana and sell it to my actor friends in Los Angeles. Is marijuana illegal in Britain?
It is, yeah. It's kind of a low classification, but yeah, I mean, for growing it and dealing it, I think you'll get in trouble. Definitely.
So it is the same thing. Are they doing the same thing where there's legislation being pushed through to try and legalize it, and there are people going, it's fine, it's medicine.
As well, I think there are some medical conditions under which it's permissible, but I haven't figured out how to get the paperwork for that yet. So.
As soon as we do that, we'll get to it right away. Right away. I like this. Is there any other ways that you could think of that, like what you said about the an intimate moment and another unintimate moment? Is that like how's your relationship with your wife changed?
Oh man, I mean, just finding time to have sex is just always kind of like either you go, okay, we've got 10 minutes, let's go, or you're like, oh man, we are so tired. And I know this is old, kind of well trodden ground, but still, it's still there. I mean, the boy's 18 months and we're still like, okay, man, he's just gone down for a nap. All right, let's, okay. And kind of still having to figure it out. Like, yeah. like we're little kind of teenagers again.
Yeah, well, here's why the parenting is well-trodden but always worth going down is because there's always a new crop of people that are coming in that, like, you know, there are people that listen to this show that have older kids, and they like to laugh at my experiences, you know, because, like, I remember when I was dealing with that garbage. And then there are also people who listen that are in your area or even closer to my area with kids a little bit older and maybe more than one child or on their third child. And they're like, oh, my God, yeah. Because what I got a tickle out of was hearing you say, trying to find time to have sex. Like, it becomes less of even a recreation and more of a chore. Because you said that with the same way that someone with a New Year's resolution in a few weeks would say, like, I have to find time to do jumping jacks. Like, because it's good for my mental health.
Tick that box.
Yeah, exactly. If we could just check the box of having sex. If we could just touch each other in a way that is passionate, and we just can make that happen. it's so funny and so sad at the same time that that's what it really gets boiled down to, is that you have this person in your life that you love more than anything, and you have this great relationship, and you've made a child, and then you go through this emotional turmoil of, you know, exhaustion, and then you're just working together as a well-oiled machine to keep this child alive and healthy and content and happy. And then there's a point where it kind of simmers down, but you're also a real person who loves them and wants to feel affection from another human being. and so it's interesting, because when I first started doing the show a long time ago with Bill, one of the things that we made fun of the most was that most of the books for parents, or for the dad parts of the books for, like, parents, was always like, when can I have sex again with my wife? When can I do this? When can I do this? And I remember thinking, like, that was the furthest thing necessarily from my mind. But having this conversation with you, it's like, I get it. I get where they're coming from. I think it's an unfair representation of the male perspective. I think that's not all we want to know.
Oh, yeah.
There are other things, like what kind of positions are safe and stuff like that. But no, I mean, in all honesty, I think that we would like to know how we can support and help our wives and make them feel happy so that they will have sex with us. There's also that
angle. Right. I mean, also, I can always trace back whenever we're frustrated with each other and kind of getting tired and cranky. It's usually at a point where we haven't found that time.
Right?
Yeah,
right.
They almost always coincide.
Amen to that, Robin. Amen. You are, oh my gosh, that is some wise words that have never come from a more distinguished sounding accent in the world. I couldn't agree with you more, because you did. I've thought that many a time, but I always think that it's because I'm a dumb man that's what I think. But it sounds to me like you have a wife very similar to mine, that, you know, I love my wife, and she's great. And she won't mind if I share this on the show, but I've been away for 3 weeks, and she sent me a text message last night, and she said, I cannot wait to have sex with you. Mm-hmm. You tell me that as a man who loves his wife, that doesn't want to make me jump on a damn plane right now. Okay. Just imagining the things that when it comes to that point where she has sent a message via satellite to me to convey her intentions when I arrive home of what she's going to do to me, and the excitement that builds in me. Oh, my gosh, that is amazing. You know, so, and I here's the thing too, is that, so it sounds like where she's like, okay, we got 10 minutes. We got to do this.
Yeah.
That I think, and tell me if I'm wrong, Robin, is that I think that women, obviously, they're into it too. Do you think I'm way off base here?
No. My wife is definitely, it's an important part of her kind of sanity.
Bless you.
It's linked into that part of her.
Bless you and your marriage. Well done, sir. Well, bless her. It's God's work what she does, I believe. I do hope you have it. I know this is really creepy, and I didn't mean it to sound this way, but I was going to say, I hope you have a daughter so that she can raise her to one day be the same kind of woman that your wife is. That would be to make. Here's my contention: to make a very good man who is well deserved of your daughter's love very happy one day.
That sounds more like what I was imagining.
Yeah, exactly. Not some creepo. Not some creepo teenage hornball. That's not what anybody wants for anybody's kid. But a good, solid, solid man. Yeah, oh my gosh. I know I've talked about this before too, but in this trip, you know, my wife, she sent me a few naughty photos. And I cannot, for the moms that listen to the show, I cannot emphasize enough that if you want to get your man's attention, I'm telling you, especially if it's something you've never done, you take advantage of that smartphone and just double and triple check who you're sending it to, because you don't want to be embarrassed by his best friend or somebody who happened to have the same name in your phone or something like that. You know, you triple check who that's going to, and you just send it to him. You just look at the look in his eyes when he comes home from work that day. You just see what it does to him. And oh boy, ladies, prepare to not be disappointed. That is outstanding stuff. I'm not going to put you on the spot, Robin, and say, when was the last time your wife sent you a dirty picture? Because that would be really jacked up of me
to do. I'd have to check back through the phone to be sure.
But it is funny, though, because it's interesting to me that I've seen, like, I think it was called Friends with Kids. Have you seen that movie at all with John Hamm? And I think Adam Scott is in it, too. Do you know the movie?
I know of it, but I haven't seen it.
Okay. It's a great movie. If you are taking a time while Rufus is sleeping, it's definitely worth a rental and you and the wife sitting down, because essentially what it is it's these three couples that are very, very good friends, mm-hmm. and they all of them start to have children, and one couple isn't really together. They're just friends, and mm-hmm. all their friends have had kids. And you get to, in the beginning, like the first, you know, two acts of the film, you get to see them struggle and all the funny things that, you know, like, so they have this nice dinner at a quiet, fancy restaurant, and they're drinking wine and, you know, all this stuff. And then the next time they get together, they go over to one of the friend's house, and the kids are running everywhere, and the wife is yelling at the husband that he's not helping enough. And she's like, she's all disheveled and everything. And then the other couple shows up, and they've clearly had a fight in the car, and the baby's screaming and all this. So it's just this quick shift of happiness. And then boom, we're all tired. We're all filled with stress. It's all filled with anxiety.
I've been all of those couples. Yeah, we all have.
Oh, that's great. So I'm curious, too. I just want for me to know. Maybe this isn't so much stuff for the show, but how did you stumble upon the Dad Podcast, and then why did you stick with it?
We knew when we were pregnant, we knew that – when we were pregnant, we knew we were going to have a baby. Yeah, surprise. But
you're very tired. Don't worry.
I wanted to prepare for being a dad. I think I'd always known I'd wanted to be a dad, and I looked at books and didn't find them very helpful. But I'd been listening to podcasts and enjoying them, and my wife actually said, "Well, look, why don't you look for a podcast about being a dad?" And I thought, "Yeah, that's a good idea." And I found a lot of I found some that were kind of very Christian orientated. And I thought that's probably not exactly what I'm looking for. And then I found you guys, and that was just when you and Bill were starting out, and it was absolutely perfect.
Oh, yeah, good.
It was great for me.
That's interesting. That's good. Yeah. See, that's so I do think is like, so that's the whole, that was the whole genesis of the show, that this idea that, you know, there needed to be something out there for what I would consider reality. I'm sure that there are other people that, you know, I just don't like the idea of putting on a facade of that it's easy or that it's always fun. There are obviously great moments, but they can tend to be few and far between. I mean, let's be realistic. I hope she's listening. I had this great mom come up to me after the show. I do this part in my act now where I say that, you know, you can follow me on Twitter. I like to hear poop stories from parents. And this mom, her name is Jessica. So, I think I have. Yeah, it's Jessica. I'm pretty sure it's right. It was hard because there was three sisters that all came up to me. And so if you're listening, I love the story. And I've told it easily four, five, maybe more times. She said that her daughter, when she was potty training her daughter was 2.5. And she was shocked because, you know, girls usually potty train easier than boys. And so the daughter didn't want to, like, use the toilet or whatever. And so, therefore, decided to just take a dump in the bedroom floor. Like, just do it there. Then didn't know what to do with the fecal matter. So she took a tree from one of her play sets, stabbed it into the dookie, and then was like, okay, now what do I do? Like, okay, step one accomplished, you know, making up the steps as she goes.
Yeah.
She's like, well, I got to find a place to put it. In her search for a place to hide it, she decided it would also be funny to dab it. So she dabbed it along the sides of the bunk bed, along the sides of the walls, you know. And this, God bless them, this is when the parents were saying, you know, we're going to have some me time and watch like a TV show. That's all they're doing. They're asking for 22 minutes if you're TiVoing it. Mm-hmm. And so she goes, oh, I got to go to the bathroom. Oh, and then it ends where she decides, well, I'll hide it in my little brother's sock drawer. So she puts it in the drawer of the dresser, shuts the dresser. Mom gets up to go to the bathroom, turns on the light in the hallway, and just sees little spots of brown on her walls. She's like, what is that? And then gets a whiff and goes, oh, my God. So she starts scrubbing it, right? And she goes, I'm just crying. The poor thing. She's like, this is horrible. Like, this is what my life has become. This is what I decided, you know? And she's cleaning her walls, the poor thing. And I asked her, I go, what? This is my favorite part. I go, what was your husband doing? And she goes, he was dry heaving in the background. So she had dishwasher gloves, you know, those yellow rubber gloves, and she's scrubbing the walls. And I just imagine her husband in the background going, oh, oh. Like he's just trying to, I want to help, oh, I want to help you, but I can't, babe. I love, oh. You know? So then she finishes scrubbing the walls and the bed and everything, and she still smells it. And she thinks that it's on her hand. Somehow it got through the gloves, you know. And so she scrubs her hands with vinegar, and the smell is still there. And so she's like, what? And then. So then some, I can't remember how, but she said, I go, well, how did you get, she go, I go, how did you find it? She's like, well, I thought it was the smell. And then I started looking to see if there was more on the walls. And she happened to find a concentrated dose of the smell, opened up the sock drawer and found the dookie stabbed with a little tree from a playset. And I was like, I love telling that story to parents because it's like, People always have the same reaction, Jessica, if you're listening. They either say, oh, my gosh, that's awesome, and they laugh or whatever, or they go, you know what? I've never had it that bad. Have you had a blowout diaper yet with Rufus?
Oh, well, we've had a few. We've tried to do a mix of disposable diapers and reusable ones. Uh-huh. And
So is that a big thing, reusable diapers there, because of, like – like what we were talking about, the lack of space for trash and stuff?
I mean, they're still pretty kind of hippified, I guess. But they're getting pushed more and more, and they're getting easier and easier to use. But so we've done a mix of both because we were like, if we just try and do just reusable ones, we're never going to manage. So yeah. Make our lives easier. But we still use some in the daytimes. But what that means is you got to take the deuce and you got to put it in the toilet. And so I've had a few couple of times where I've fumbled in the dark in the night and been cleaning up on the floor or
I'm sorry, I'm laughing, but it's so rude. But at the same time, I can easily see that image in my head of you like,
okay. like
your wife. It starts with your wife hitting you on the shoulder. It's your turn. It's your turn. Yeah. You're like, okay, all right, I love you, babe. Here we go. Here we go. And then you go in there, and then you like, and then it's just okay. And then the baby's already back in the bed. So now, what am I going to do with this? And then it just, you just mishandle it, and you just hear. And then there's like a chance that you're going to step in it in a slipper, or God forbid, a barefoot. That's what I imagine. I see in your future if it hasn't already happened.
Oh yeah.
And then that's a whole other bath entirely. Uh-huh. Is it like here in the States, like they push this big anti-smoking thing, and so then they started heavily taxing packs of cigarettes to make them more expensive and harder to get, really just so the government could have more money. But so do they do the same thing with disposable diapers because of the lack of space for trash and landfills and stuff?
I don't see it happening that obviously. I mean, I imagine it might end up going that way. We've got a huge push for recycling everywhere. I mean, by law now, everywhere's got to have recycling bins as well, and you can get prosecuted if you're starting to throw away stuff that should have been recycled. So that's a big part of things.
That's good.
Yeah, I mean, how much is that happening in the States? I guess it's in California more?
I'm sure that there are areas, like maybe New York might have that same kind of thing. I don't think so, in my personal opinion. And I know that in Burbank, where I live, it's more about water conservation than necessary. There's a push for recycling and an awareness, but it's not by any means a requirement.
Yeah.
So I like the building I manage, we're not required to have a recycling bin. I've tried to get one put in, but we just don't have a ton of room for it, which is ironic, I think. So that, but we have the city came up with this mandate that you have to have the low flow aerators and low flow toilets and low flow shower heads. But I think that might have more to do with the fact that Los Angeles is supposed to be a desert, and we get a lot of water piped in from other areas, and so that can be expensive for a city to provide water. So they're like, well, let's use low flow stuff to conserve water, but we got plenty of room for trash. We just dump that wherever.
Yeah.
So how does it, do you guys have a service, or is it something that just becomes a part of your laundry? And I'm sorry if this sounds ignorant, but I am ignorant too.
We have a service, but I'm not, We don't have a service. We have part of our laundry. Sorry, I'm quite tired now.
No, that's okay. That's all right.
So it means we're washing it out in the bathtub or in the toilet, and then by hand, and then putting it in a bucket, putting it through the machine, and running it. So you kind of quickly desensitize to just washing out those nappies by hand, I guess.
Yeah,
that's just become part of what it is.
That's good. I like the idea of you being a gristled veteran when it comes to fecal matter. Just like
oh man, yeah.
Can you imagine you now at almost 30 and going back to like a yard school? I don't know if it's the same in Britain, but sometimes when you get around the fourth or fifth grade, you see a piece of dog poop in the park, and if you're amongst friends, they're like, "I'll give you $1 if you go touch that." You know what I mean? Can you? Not that a dollar would necessarily do it, but I think now I could easily touch poop. Just because I know that it's not going to be a big, like, it's just as insignificant as the dollar. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Like, that's like, poop, you're going to have to do better than that. All right, let me vomit on your face. Okay, yeah, how much you got? $1? Sure, it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. As long as it's milk-based, then I can handle it, no problem.
Yeah. As soon as we get carrots in there, and that's going to be...
So he's eating solid foods, right?
Oh yeah, he has been. I mean, he tends to eat what we eat now, which is
that's great. Yeah,
I'm really lucky with how good he's been about that.
That's so great. And he just,
he's at the point where if he's not eating the same thing as us, he gets mad about it. So
really,
yeah. So if we make ourselves something for breakfast and give him his baby porridge, he'll go nope, get some of that. Yeah.
That's so interesting to me how they're wired to do that, because both my kids, like recently, Jack just got, he wouldn't eat if it was in the high chair. Uh-huh. But he never like tried to communicate the idea if he wanted to sit in a regular chair. And so, but luckily Jacob went through the same thing, and we had already figured out. So we had a booster seat that we held onto that we attached to one of our chairs, and then we put him in that, and then he eats at the table just like us. And you know, it's like a weird pack animal mentality that they're like, I just want to do what you guys are doing. That's all I'm looking for. Mm-hmm.
Cool. I mean, I went through this whole thing where I was like, man, I've got to get him playing with more kids, because all he wanted to do was get the dustpan and brush and the broom and kind of tidy up the house like mum and dad are doing all day. So, you've got to see more kids.
We've got to get you around to – you need a ball or something. Yeah. Something. Yeah. I don't know. I think you embrace it. I think you start making him do chores at 18 months and just say pull
like
your way.
Idea. Yeah, I mean, he's just into kind of everyday objects. His toys see far less use than things like, I guess, the broom, or I don't know what else he gets hold of, or anything becomes a telephone now as well. So he makes a little thing with his blocks, he picks it up and he's like, hey.
I don't know if they have it here, and I'd like to think that it's a novelty, but I don't think it is that they have like onesies that have on the elbows and forearms and knees, and I think even a little bit of the belly, the same thing as like a dry mop.
I've seen an ad for that for a Japanese wearing one.
Isn't that so offensive to you? I don't know. I mean, I think I get it, and I'm like, that's funny. And on a level, I'm like, oh. And you're like, oh, it's kind of practical, but it just seems kind of cold and disconnected. Yeah. Like, it just seems weird to me, too. It's like... Yeah, I mean, because rationally, like, that makes sense. The kid's going to be crawling, might as well sweep up the floor. But then at the same time, it's like, well, it's not like he's got a dustpan under his chin. It's just going to be moving it around. Like, now you're just being a jerk. Like, that's some form of loophole in slave labor, I think. I don't know. Like,
yeah, my thinking is I'm still going to have to sweep that anyway. So
yeah, exactly. It's not. Yeah, just you're just pushing it away from wherever the child is, and then like I kept thinking, like, because that's what I immediately think. You don't look at the pristine baby and the pristine mop. My mind went instantly to like the 8 month old mop, and you're like, that's what it's going to look like, and people are going to put that on their children. That's horrible. And somewhere, you know, Robin, you know that somewhere some parent is like, oh my gosh, yeah, little Jimmy just sweeps up the kitchen floor, you know, and he doesn't know it, and it's just great for all of us, you know, like.
But one day he'll know.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope so. Or, no, you know what? I hope, Robin, I hope he doesn't know. It's for his own safety. I mean, if you have that kind of parent, though, there's something else that you end up figuring out later on. You know what I mean? But you don't remember 18-month-old you crawling around on the floor for that exact reason. But the bad part is that usually there's some other damage that will come along psychologically that happens. Oh, well, Robin, thank you so much for doing the show. We're going to wrap it up and do our moments of the week. Unless there's anything else that you want to anything come up during this conversation that you want to share of, hey, this is how us British do it, you Americans should be doing that? Or
I don't know. I already had an idea for a book for fathering from what you were saying earlier today.
Okay.
Which is The Art of Lowering the Bar.
And that's my whole goal with this podcast, is that's what I want to do, is lower the bar and go, hey, everybody, let's not get all excited, okay? Every day isn't going to be filled with a craft and some kind of stimulus for your child. It's just like sometimes let's just sit and breathe, all right? Yes. Let's do the minimum expectation, gang.
The greatest advice I ever got off you guys was he'll never cry himself to death.
Exactly.
That saved me a lot of times.
Now tell me honestly, Rob, do you honestly, because I found that advice when I was given it, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's solid. But I have been, not that I'm judging it, like, or the people who have taken it, but I am shocked at that is the single thing that I've told people that I've gotten the most feedback from.
Really? I mean, for me, I mean, it's not that we let him cry all the time at all, but there have been those times where it's just, I've been so tired.
Yeah.
My wife's been so tired, and it's just been one of those days where he won't go to sleep, he won't go to bed. We go, actually, I just need to walk away from it for a minute.
Yes.
And they are few and far between, but those moments, that has been one of the things that's really kind of just get me together.
And I think that's where it comes from, because I mean, even now, and you and I both know that it's not justifiably so, but you almost have to, I heard you, like, you have to backpedal because you feel bad. You don't want people to think that you're just, oh, he's just letting him cry in the bassinet. Those British people, they're so cold and heartless, you know? But it's true. Like, and I like it. I like that it's out there, because that's the big thing that I wanted to do with this show. But I'm really half shocked and impressed with the idea that people always, every time, my Natalie's best friend said the same thing. And she was like, oh my God, cause when you told me that, I was like, that's not going to be me. Mm-hmm. And then she's like, and I felt myself getting frustrated. I'm like, I need to put him down and I need to walk away or something bad is going to happen. And you're like, and I, to me, I'm like, yeah. And I, yeah, well, that's great. That's great. That's awesome. I love it. Oh, you know what? One more thing that I just thought of, how into Downton Abbey are the British people?
I'm probably a bit atypical there because I don't watch a lot of TV, but it is huge over here. Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing it's pretty big in the States as well, though.
Oh my gosh, yeah, it is. Everybody is. I have friends that I'm here with, or the comic I'm touring with, Heath Heitch, that he has plans with his family to watch the Christmas special on Christmas.
Oh, like, wow.
And I watched it already. I just watched it last week, and I said, I go, hey, just so you know, are you planning to watch this because you feel like it's going to be perfect? Like, because Americans like to, like, that's what I think about your in-laws. Americans like to think of Christmas in England, or maybe I'm just going through a weird England thing. Like, I really want to go move to England for a year, but I just feel like Christmas in England would just be so awesome. Am I crazy?
I think it's a very different thing to the American Christmas for me. I mean, honestly, for me, the picture of the American Christmas is one from TV shows, from films, from Hollywood, is a real idealized thing for me. And I think we probably have a similar idea of what the American Christmas is to what you guys are thinking the English one is. I mean, we don't get very much snow till January or February.
Oh, yeah, you already took it away from me.
But I mean, it's cold and wet and miserable, but yeah. But we don't get
Don't get me wrong. We'll give you some crummy weather. That's what I've heard a lot about England. Like, it is, if you want to live in some shitty weather, please come to England. Like,
but I mean, I think the Christmas spirit's there definitely, and we like to drink a lot of wine as well, so that definitely helps keep people cheerful. But yeah, but I think in terms of the English Christmas, it's, I don't know. So I'd say, I mean, we'll get carol singers going around and things like that. But depending on where you live and how strong the community is, that's going to define what it is, I think. And whether it's you and your family, or whether it's you and your neighbours, or you and your church group, or whatever that is. That, I don't know, I think that's what's defining Christmas for us at the moment. That's what's important.
So you come to your in-laws in Dallas for Christmas, and you're probably like, man, this is gorgeous. It's warm. Or maybe there's a little bit of a chill in the air, but it's not the wet cold that I imagine you have in England. Am I right?
Me, I'm in shorts and T-shirts.
Yeah,
in
yeah.
December, yeah. Yeah, no problem.
Does it piss you off that they're all in jackets and stuff? Or is it really 75 degrees?
Yeah, I mean, I'm like, hey, guys, this is great. And they're like, what? You're mad. This is cold.
Oh, that's awesome. That's outstanding. All right. Well, I think I nailed everything. You want to do some moments of the week?
Let's go for it. I didn't prepare one, so I'll be, yeah.
Well, wing it. I usually do.
Great.
You made them. You love them. And sometimes you want to choke the living shit out of them. But occasionally they give you that one sweet moment. This is that moment. Moment of the week, brought to you by Stitcher, the free app that handles all your podcasting needs without having to sync to your computer. Stream all your favorite podcasts right to your Droid, BlackBerry, or iPhone. Just go to thedadpodcast.com and click on the Stitcher logo on the left-hand side. It's free, people, and they give us money if you do it.
Well, my moment of the week with Jacob was a touching moment. Where I've been trying to talk to the kids and stuff like that. And my sister-in-law and my brother were nice enough, or my sister, to send the kids presents, is what I was told. Some of my siblings, I don't know which ones, and I'm sorry. My siblings sent presents to the kids, and the babysitter was there when they were delivered. And I guess Jacob saw him. He's like, oh, he knew what they were. And so she said, well, you have to wait till your mom gets home. So then my wife comes home, and then he gets excited again. We get to open the presents. And then she goes, no, you got to wait. Wait for the presents, please. And so then until your dad gets home. And so then they're sitting down getting ready to go to bed. And she goes, do you miss your dad? And he was like, yeah. She goes, what do you miss, most about dad? And he goes, getting to open presents. And she's like, yeah, but you don't do that. That's only because it's Christmas. Like, she goes, what about the stuff you usually do during the day? Like, sometimes you'll play video games with him. She's like, yeah, I miss that. And then she said, she goes, and what about when he takes you to the park or something? She's like, he goes, yeah, I miss that. And then she goes, what about wrestling? And he goes, oh, yeah, I really miss that, which I thought was adorable. Because she said she's noticed that both of them have a little bit of, like, pinned up energy, because I usually wrestle with them at night at a point if I have time to kind of burn off some of that energy before they go to bed. Mm-hmm. And then he said, there was a pause or whatever, and he goes, you know what I miss about dad not being here most? And she goes, what? And he goes, cuddling. And I was like, oh, damn it, I wish I could come home. I wish I could come home. And with Jack, we do the FaceTime. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because he gets excited that he sees me, and he's transitioned from, he used to try and put his head, like, look behind the computer screen to see where I was on the other side of it. Like, he didn't understand that it was just a digital image. Like, he thought, yeah, I was standing behind the computer or something. And now he understands the convention of you just talk to each other through the computer. But he doesn't really talk. He only has, like, 10 or 12 words that he knows. So what he does now is he starts having an adult conversation, as I'm sure you've heard Rufus do, where they have an adult conversation, but nothing intelligible is being said. It's and then I go, really? And he goes, uh-huh. Yeah. And so that was pretty damn cute, and I can't wait to get home. First, to have this sex that my wife so desires. Oh, yeah. And secondly, to cuddle with my kids. That's let's not get those priorities mixed up.
Absolutely.
All right, your turn, Robin.
Okay, well, I've got a cuddling orientated moment as well, because we got a book called Hug, which Rufus loves to read. So he kind of understands the word hug, and we say, oh, come and give us a hug, and he comes and gives us a hug. But recently, because we moved into the new block, we got a lot of other families around, and one of the ladies upstairs, she's having her second kid probably in about a month, and had to go off to the hospital. So I've been getting photos of Rufus and James from upstairs playing together. Mm-hmm. And when I came home today, my wife showed me a video of them, and apparently what Rufus has been doing all day is hugging James, to Aww. The point where James, who's 5 months older, has been like, ah!
Get away.
So yeah, I'm really proud of him, because he's just been kind of going up to this other kid and giving him cuddles and stuff. And yeah, he looks like he's really kind of being a very generous, playful kid.
Yeah, isn't that the best, when you get to see that you don't know, and there's those moments that you get where you're like, okay, I am doing something really good. I'm raising a nice, loving person who has a kind heart. Yeah, definitely can relate to that. That's great. Well, that's our show. Give us a call, 408-228-4911, or you can send us an email to show@thedadpodcast.com. Don't forget to follow the podcast on Twitter @dadpodcast, or you could follow me on Twitter @JustinWorsham. I don't have really any dates coming up in January at the time of this recording, but if you want to go to justincomedy.com and check out my dates, You could do that depending on whenever you are listening to this. Also, I want to say thank you to all of our paid subscribers. If you want to help support the show, you can either donate money through the dadpodcast.com or you can pay $2 a month, because if everybody did that listen, this would change my life and I would appreciate it. But no worries if you can't. I completely understand. Well, this is after Christmas, but if Valentine's Day is coming up, if you want to buy something for your lovely lady or your lovely man, you can click through the Amazon banner at thedadpodcast.com, and they give us a little taste of everything we drive towards them. For Robin, you can find him at robingyver.co.uk. He's an actor in Britain. He was saying, he's like, well, that's for more for my working stuff, but I think most of the listeners would be curious and want to go check it out. Guyver, of course, as you can see in the description, is G-U-I-V-E-R, or you could follow him on Twitter at robingyver. That is his Twitter handle, and I think that's it, unless I missed anything, Robin.
No, that's good for me. Thank you so much, Justin. It's been a real pleasure.
I can't wait. If I have any, you are going to be our UK parenting correspondent, if you don't mind. I can't wait. I don't think you're our only listener with a kid. I think in the UK. So if anybody is, please feel free to tweet him, and maybe you guys can have a little dad podcast support group there.
Take some photos and send them over.
On behalf of my new British friend Robin Guyver, this is Justin Worship saying, "Stay frosty."